honorable member, an apology of honorable party, apology of honorable Lamb. From the department, I do have the apology of the minister and the apology of the DG. They are abroad. The deputy DG will be here. Honourable member, my name is Ulifile Sefapo, chairperson of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources. Then I'm from Northwest. I'll hand over to honourable members to introduce themselves.
Good morning,
JWW Julian. Good morning, good morning. Let me sing for the hotel.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Jonathan Farmer.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'll miss you as the content advisor of the committee.
Deputy DG.
Good morning, honorable chair, honorable members. My name is Tanoba Skin, I'm a researcher in the Northwest Commercial Education.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Errol Makova. I'm a parliamentary officer in the Minister's Office.
Good morning. Good morning, Pakistan. Pakistan, Chair.
Good
I'm
Good morning, Chairman and Honorable Members. Justice Munafa, Parliament Communications.
Well, thank you very much. Once more, the department is now going to take us through this very important marine special training bill. Without any waste of time, and I'll just go over to you to take us through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. So I will introduce the presentation, and then Radio Razak will take members through the details of the bill. The background really is that through 5 years ago, there was a recognition of the importance of setting down a clear policy direction in respect of managing our oceans. That was informed by an exploration not only of domestic legislation, but also broadly international approaches and instruments towards managing the oceans and the ocean space. And in fact, what emerged was that there are other countries internationally that set down a set of principles and a clear set of policy statements. Having done that process and understanding the pressures and priorities in respect of South Africa's oceans, an ocean policy was presented to Cabinet at the end of 2013. And the decision at that Cabinet meeting was that the Minister, who at that time was Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs, supported by the various ministries that have an interest in the management of our ocean, should develop an integrated approach to ocean governance, including management plans for ocean areas, dealing with conflict scenarios, dealing with trade-offs, as recommended in the White Paper on managing our ocean. And that decision was then taken forward through the Operation Pakisa, which took place during 2014. It was the first Operation Pakisa that focused on development of an oceans economy. It was a really key process towards understanding the multiple interests in our ocean space and the multiple opportunities. And as honourable members know, there were a number of streams and thematic areas that were identified through the oceans economy around expediting and honing in on opportunities in respect of marine transport and manufacturing, small harbours, oil and gas exploration, oceans governance, aquaculture, etc. The key recognition, I think, was that as interest was growing in optimizing the use of our oceans for both promoting economic growth, economic opportunities, and job creation, we needed also to recognize that increased interest and increased intensity in use of our ocean space meant that we needed a very clear and focused approach to managing and governing our ocean space. And hence was born the Marine Spatial Planning Bill, which essentially is a process for a cooperative governance process for decision making in respect of potentially overlapping areas or overlapping activities within our ocean. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I think at this stage I would like to hand over to Radia, who is our legal expert, and has together with the members of the team in the Ocean Branch led by Kobani Popov, have really developed, managed, facilitated consultation and then engaged and supported in the process in the National Assembly through the Portfolio Committee to get us to where we are. Thank you, Radu. Very long ago, so it was prior to 2014, so obviously I took what was written there and I came in the morning and I said, this is not the select committee on mineral resources and land affairs, environmental affairs, and community. No, and I got that from the NACO for your content advisor this morning, so please accept my apologies, we'll fix this, that you correctly reflected and, you know, it wasn't an intentional error. So I'm going to take you through the we're going to do an overall presentation of the goal so that the committee can by the committee in how to go forward. We've done an overall presentation so that we can introduce all the members to what the bill is about from a general perspective, and then of course we're going to get to the floor by floor, and then we'll be able to get to more of the details of what I'm describing now. To move on from the background that the DG gave to you, we need to just put a context here. And this has been the context that we've had to work with from the outset of developing this goal, which, as you were led, you were told by the DDG, was quite an intensive consultation process because there's so many different layers, both within government and outside stakeholders that had to be part of this process. So why there's so much fuss about a marine spatial planning goal is because if you look at the extent of South Africa's ocean space, we actually are responsible for a greater ocean jurisdiction than we are for land. If you look at the land size, and of course there's a lot more activity and a lot more things going on in the land, but also there's an increasing expansion of activity in the sea space. So we have to now look at the extent of that and what it means for us as a country. We've got 1.2 million square kilometers of land. Kilometers of what's called our exclusive economic zone. And that is what has been given to us under the United Nations Convention on the Sea, what's referred to as UNCLOS, where all countries were given their territorial seats and what they have sovereignty over in certain respects and in different rules that apply, but that's basically where we can draw our resources and have control over our resources. And now I have what's called an extended continental shelf plain, which will actually double the size of our ocean geographic extent to 1.87 million square kilometers. The continental shelf will then give us additional rights to the geological substrata, which is the seabed and what's underneath, so the resources down there, and that will give us an additional claim of sovereignty and jurisdiction over that area. Why marine spatial planning and why we need this goal is just very clearly shown. This is a cartoon which I borrowed from also Honourable Member Captain Bacon from Professor Ellis, who is a marine spatial planning expert. And I thought he very aptly described what the situation is that we face today. If you look at the cartoon on the left, that was what you're looking at 200 years ago, maybe even 100 years ago. A little bit of navigation, warship, some trade, but not enough to warrant any concern because nobody was bumping into each other. And then the highway suddenly increased when you look to your right. The activities that are happening in the ocean space is so much more. We're not talking here, we're talking offshore, where there's a lot more cargo, there's a lot more fishing, there's a lot more exploration for oil and gas, and there's a lot more ecosystem research, etc., etc. So that space is becoming increasingly saturated and busy, and so now you need traffic on the road. When there's no traffic on the road, you don't need that kind of regulation. But now that there is, we need to organize ourselves in a way that we make sure that people don't bump into each other and that we try to take into account as many interests as we can and create a coordinated, integrated approach there. So the MSP goal, the purpose is actually to move from human sector planning and permitting to integrated coordinating planning and permitting. Now, when I say permitting, I don't want the community to get the idea that this goal is actually going to regulate or do any permitting in itself. This is not a bill that regulates the laws. Sorry, the laws are regulated by the sectors themselves. So you still have the fisheries laws, the mineral resources laws, the environmental laws. This bill, and that was one of our main challenges, is everything is going to overtake these sector laws, and it's not. This is actually just a bill that's getting all the regulators around the table. It's actually getting governments to talk to each other before they start just permitting and giving rights in the space and then crossing over each other and causing conflict. So it's really for all the departments and to consult the sectors and to consult everybody affected around the table, to sit around the table and to plan how to work together to be able to manage what's happening. So of course there's the various different interests. We know the oceans are not homogenous. It's not, there's not one thing happening and we can't apply one to the rule because it's very different. It's a very dynamic environment. It's not like land. Because what happens in the sea is currents and tides and natural ocean processes cause species to move around all the time. In fact, you know, mammals can travel from as far as Australia to South Africa, and we have fish that that have nurseries and they breed in one area and they actually then grow and move to another area. So there's this constant movement and migration of resources, and also there's this constant impact that's coming from external weather conditions like climate change, like a normal natural weather processes, etc. So when you look at the areas that are ecologically important from an environmental perspective. Some of these areas we identify and we would say areas of high biodiversity, areas of high productivity, there's spawning areas, nursery areas, what they call nursery areas, areas where where fish spawn and breed. And then there's migration corridors and stopover points and all of these have significance because you don't want to destroy nursery areas, for example, because if we're using fish as a resource, you want them to be able to grow to a decent size so that they can then feed the population. So from all of and if there's high biodiversity, we know that there's a knock-on effect on everything that happens. So these are the spots that you want to protect in the first place. Then there are other areas that are actually more economically important. And then others, and this is where you have oil and gas deposits, sand and gravel deposits, fishing grounds, transportation routes, areas of sustained wind, areas of sustained waves. These are the kinds of activities which also require some kind of management so that we ensure that we use an optimally utilized marine resources in a sustainable manner. We don't get leakage. So what happens is the importance of marine spatial planning in South Africa is you have these different uses, conservation, energy, shipping, recreation, offshore, aquaculture, etc.
there's no overall system to guide and develop planning in this area. So everybody's just doing their own thing and permitting where they think and imposing their sector laws. And sometimes these are not working very well because there's no mapping of what the best areas to be used for what activity and how we can devise a system that talks to each other. So the marine spatial planning is then takes all of these different features into account and all information, and then overlays of these to give us a map and a system to be able to plan and manage all the different activities and sectors. This is just an information map to give, for example, the 2006 oil and gas lease area, and it gives you an indication of what's going on there. We've got another slide that gives you some information on what's happening in fishing and fisheries, how many species are targeted, how many tons of marine organisms are harvested annually. And then it's our fishing protection within marine protected areas. We also know the risk of degradation of ocean resources, and that can happen so fast that when we turn around and look, we're actually going to rob ourselves to the future of any sustainable resource utilization. So we need to look at replacement of lost natural services and carrying high economic and social costs. So you'll see that this one talks to the MPAs, the networks of MPAs that are required as effective management tools. We have a slide that tells you about the protection of habitats and species and which particular areas need to be more carefully managed than others. And then what we did was we had to look to some of the countries that had already developed marine spatial plans. And although they're very different South Africa in the sense that it's a Norway who's been given a lot, who's been helping, for example, fisheries in South Africa with donor funding, etc. Have exchanged a lot of information with us and shared the experience with us. And if you look at their map, they've got a much smaller area, and they're particularly valuable and vulnerable areas. They've got marked out, they've got the oil and gas, sea transport, offshore wind areas, and fisheries. And it looks quite messy because it's an overlay of the different areas. And then it becomes a technical exercise of trying to unpack these. Now what we did was we had to work out a system based on what we looked at internationally, based on our ocean policy, on how to make an institutional arrangement that's workable. And I must say that having tried multi-departmental fora in the past has not been very successful, but the difference that we have here is that with Operation Pasita, there was a lot more willingness and buy-in, and so departments have, with a lot of work from Mr. Sobani Fokote, managed to actually come together and start doing some practical work on the ground. So we had to identify the departments that had direct stakes in the, particularly the offshore ocean arena, and the departments you see up there were the ones that were identified along the way, some were added because we'd forgotten about cabling, for example, and navigation communications. These were the departments that had direct permitting roles, direct regulatory roles in the ocean space. So, what the arrangement was to create what's called the National Working Group. And they are then to prepare draft area plans in stages, because we're dealing with a huge mass of ocean which we don't have the resources or capacity to all in one. So we're going to have to take those for a second time. And that stakeholder engagement will determine, or has been helping to determine, which will be the most appropriate areas and how to do it. So they've divided it up into the West Coast, East Coast, South East Coast, and the Pacific Islands, which is of course part of our territorial land and sea. Consultation throughout the process, government, industry, civil society, gives and is absolutely necessary. So there's a process still for marine spatial planning, and we'll see this more in detail when we go through the course of film and film. We have to start with information and knowledge. So what happens is there's a database and a program of managing all the information from the different sectors is critical. And so everything needs to feed into that information system. And all the sectors have to bring their information to that system. So it acts as a repository for the information. But what happens with that information is that there's been a development of broad objectives and principles for MSP, which is the marine spatial planning framework, that tells you these are the things we'd like to achieve. And then, of course, the last aspect that the bill talks about is the new area plan. So that's actually the heart of the planning. There's maps, spatial and temporal data, smaller planning units, like I've described earlier, those areas that need to happen. But in each of these maps are going to be plans that are negotiated for these different activities and for offices and working in a local manner. So the National Working Group then can consult experts, and it has all the work of these working on the technical aspects, the mapping, the consultation, the back and forth, which can take a very extensive time because there's so many different sectors and so many different interests. And we experienced that when we had pre-parliamentary stakeholder engagement, we had lots of fisheries being very nervous about this, etc. So when that process takes place, there will have to be a lot of engagement and back and forth on the recommendations. And then what happens is the National Working Group makes the recommendations to the Director General MSP Committee, which is to have the same departmental rep, and then the Minister's MSP Committee, which then makes the final decision. So this model was really based on, because with MSP, and this is what we've learned from a lot of the experts, is marine spatial planning cannot happen except at executive level. If there's political buy-in at executive level, that's when you're going to get cooperation. Otherwise, you're probably going to be wasting your time because the departments just won't participate and you won't get proper decision making. So from that perspective, we worked this on the mini cabinet system, which currently works, and this mimics that system. So when the decision making it happens in the same way that the executive makes important other decisions around policies, etc. And then of course it means that this committee's decision is obviously subject to a review by the court if there's unhappiness about it, because it becomes extremely difficult to build in an appeal process when you're dealing with this kind of structure. We've been through a lot of debates around that, and we can share some of our thinking with the committee when we get there. The MSP has broad planning priorities. The individual sector departments implement their own laws, as I mentioned at the beginning, in line with the broad MSP planning priorities. And so if there's an agreement, for example, that there'll be no MPAs in an area prioritized for another conflict use like mining, then that's what they must adhere to. Or if you can't declare an MPA in an area identified for oil and gas exploration, then the department has to adhere to that. In other words, they can't then go rogue and start issuing permits or giving licenses contrary to what was agreed at this level. So we don't give the authorization, but we don't do enforcement at this level. That's the sector departments that do that. But there has to be a way to manage the planning and coordination and make sure that departments can adhere to what was finally conversation between myself and Mr. Kokosi. I'm sure we'll do our best to try and answer it.
Thank you very much. I think our honorable members that just won't join us for after introduction. All of them see the portfolio committee and the discussion. Be afforded the opportunity to just quickly introduce yourself. All those that have joined us, quickly introduce yourself and then
we can. Lina Lavekin Kahisan Kobi, the member of the committee, A, to represent the province and other municipalities.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, my name is Khawa Bohem Lapisi, from the
Northwest. Oh, thanks. We can then proceed with engagement for you, Honorable Member. Here's the presentation. We will check. We appreciate that there is collaborative engagement. We will look as to how our guests in this MSP and MPRP department has been thoroughly engaged. That is one that I was going in and then I hand over to one of the members. Those that want to make a difference, for those that want to appreciate the presentation, Honorable Prince. Share with you for it, another member of the department, of course, is playing an important role, but also corruption. We want that opportunity, Honorable Member, you also, Honorable Member Kastner,
Honorable Julius, at some point I was impressed to see a young boys and girls that were doing research in the ocean. Among them there was a young boy from a deep rural area from Taung, brilliant. I'm not sure how far away to see at this one, but I was indeed impressed. Can we proceed in that one of the energy?
Thanks, Chair. Let me also join and welcome the simplification of what has been presented to us by the President. My first question is in relation to the financial implications. If you can outline that so that we can have a better sense. The second one, probably the issue of they're saying we must deal with it in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution. Maybe a little bit of elaboration so that we appreciate why they opted for that. Then the last part, I read somewhere, but I missed it on the presentation, probably it was not explained, outlining the process. My interpretation was people to be consulted. Is it implying that if you are from Northwest, for example, Jefferson, must you not consult people because they don't have an ocean in Northwest? What are the implications of the statement of listing areas for hearing so that we understand this will be that we're going to deal with it in terms of Section 76? Those are mainly my three questions. Otherwise, what was presented to us here very forward. But where they say you must not kick a person when it's down, according to the rules of government. But I'm tempted to take it further that, well, we can accept it today as a committee, but in future, anything that will come to us and not reflecting us towards the end of our term as a department is a serious problem. Because it means you plan, you are coming to us, and there's a communication between the department and us. And if there is communication, because it's not a surprise, it's not that we just walk into your department or we call you to say come. No. There was a proper planning, it was programming, and so be. So anything that is in front of us should reflect that there was indeed that proper preparation to make us to appreciate that you take us serious. But if you come to us, well, you disempower us a little bit by apologizing for referring to us in a wrong way. We take that for today, but in future it's going to be a very serious problem. We want to see that there was communication between your office and them, Chair. We are not surprised, and it's not a surprise, Ms. Leader, that we can have something of the nature of the problem. And, well, if you have a team like this, if you go to page, the second page, after the first one, after this one, the second one. You can see that it's not only about what you apologize about. If you can read the first bullet and read the second point, explore and white one, go through the entire sentence, you can see that there's something that is wrong. It means it was not properly edited. No, this one. This one. Here with the breaker. If you can read the second, if you can put it on the side and read the second bullet, you see the part that is wrong there. Or you don't see it. Chair?
Chair.
we can start even from the letters of policy. If you go down the letter and refer to as the chairperson of the portfolio committee, so there is a lot of errors, comedies of errors. We as a historically, of course, with the department, a cordial relation. But let's say such mistake indeed shouldn't be faced. Can we go to the... Are you done with your questions?
I wanted the department to confirm that they see what I'm referring to. You see what is wrong? That the document, even though the presentation was good, we are not taking away and commenting, but they simplify it to us where for a better sense of understanding it, but edit what you present to us. Sometimes, if you happen to have other people being in this meeting, because our meeting is open to the meeting, and they will think that we see this daring mistakes and we're not raising it as a committee. So it's not something that can be taken by the first chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to ask more questions than what has been presented to us. And I've gone through them. The further things is the bill and then the agreement as done by the Sunday. So please just give me the opportunity. Essentially the objective of the bill is positive and we read that. But I have a few questions around certain definitions. That is a bit of a confusing. First of all, there's the issue of the social framework bill, and then there is the issue of the draft participation framework. The draft participation framework is, but at this moment we're busy with that. But in this bill, in section 7, we refer to the new spatial planning system. But there's no clear definition. What is the difference between the two? There's no definition for new spatial planning as such. Because we're talking about the new spatial planning as the bill, and this bill will be the supreme bill, the whole issue. And then we're talking about the draft new spatial planning framework, and then talk about marine spatial planning areas. So my question is, why can't the draft marine spatial planning framework not be incorporated into this one? And the question that swirled out there, that has been presented in 2016, and we're busy with that, but also in this bill, three new structures are being mentioned by the National Working Group. Now, will the National Working Group, the work they're going to do, take into consideration that we'll have to take into consideration the draft for the special planning framework? So, do you hear what I'm saying? Why can't it be part of incorporated in the bill and have one more? Then the other point is the whole issue of the National Environment Management Act. There is a consultative national environmental policy process. As is. and that framework provides a sustainable development and all those things. This goal, the social planning goal, is totally silent on the impact that this working will have for the community. Now, considering that the goal, this goal, the special planning goal, will take precedence with any other matter pertaining to within special planning, why do we need this goal as an independent piece of legislation? Why can't it be incorporated into the framework of NIMA in an amended goal as a new chapter? Then I want to go into what very sort of in the three new bodies that we the National Working Group and the appointment of the experts. There's a few worries, a few concerns there that there's no limit in the place, there's no limit placed in the number of officials, so it can become very big and very a lot of people can be appointed, because there's no limitations mentioned in the law. There's also not no mention made of these trans or these people that are going to be appointed into the National Working Group will be transferred permanently. Where will they possibly be? And then also the competence. Specifically referred to as competent officials. Now there's no definition of competency. and what would be if we define what would be in a sufficient degree of competency? Because competency is now will be included in the Act, which is actually not a bad thing, but then they have to define it. And then on the Directors General Committee, also be concerned. We all know that not all, or more than often, the directors of the general is a political appointment. Now, that committee has to do with recommendations to the ministerial committee. Now, I don't understand. And maybe I just don't understand. If the National Working Group has a group of competent officials being appointed, they also have that also can appoint expertise, which is in itself, in a way, could be a contradiction, because if you are a competent person in a field, why do you need appoint a panel of expertise, but keep that, take that in mind. That if they appoint that panel of expertise, why, how does it work that panel of expertise work as well as the competent officials work as to go to the DG's panel? That endorses it and then sends it to the ministry of conduct, what is the call it, Director General's committee be part of your course under the National Working Group. You understand, I feel that there's a clear goal in to do what? Because in the end, it's only the ministerial committee that can approve these plans and make recommendations.
I just want to, in line with what the Honorable
but roughly highlighted from the purpose of this act and maybe also sharing or touches on other acts. I just want to take it up spirit, but in terms of the purpose of this act and distinguish it from other pieces of legislation. I understand the point where it comes from. So just a few questions. How does the bird touch on provinces, provincial interests, nuclear provinces, so when it comes to planning and permitting? How does it change? How does it actually improve the province in the whole? Because it was about planning all day. I know all over the army touched on it. I think that was the big part in terms of our public participation. In terms of planning and permitting, I think provinces should be given more say to actually where the economy is built for local people. And also in terms of departmental things, there are current exploration of gas and oil exploration efforts. Just want to know what happened with the current one. Because there's one plan for 2019 next year. Very big one. I'm sure you know about the CRF and the Italian oil and gas exploration company in Ireland, where you could take huge, huge kilometers of exploration for next year. So my question is, will this be included in this? The reason why I'm asking this is that we have seen sometimes oil and gas exploration efforts were withheld because of political reasons. Sometimes there's corruption seeking to these efforts. Because there's huge potential in this market. Not only for them, but for our economy. That's the one part. And the other part I want to know, according to the department, you are coming with a bill to us and other departments also give this. What will take preference in terms of government policy? Will it be the environment or the economy? Because that is a very, very serious issue always when we consider issues. And I think it should be at times be legislated to say that in these areas, the environment will take preference. In that instance, the economy will take preference. But we sometimes see, because of corruption and greed, environmental issues will be left behind, and issues of growing the economy will be given preference. So I just want to know, in terms of that, how do you manage this one? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. With experience, you know, in various sectors, you know, and through our government, it's a really serious problem around red tape that makes processes very expensive, time-consuming, you know, all that. And it basically restricts economic growth as well, because, you know, all the time that lapses and everything that needs to be done. Now, in terms of this goal, there is quite a lot of procedural uncertainty and unnecessary red tape. I want to know how do you plan to actually to keep that in mind, and how do you plan to make sure that that is reduced? Because we keep on doing this over and over, and we want economy that grows, and we want to streamline this. So this is an opportunity to really look at this and how we can do that.
Honorable Connie, anything? Honorable Mlapisi? Honorable Pateng? If nothing, go to the party.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and honorable members. This is a combination of questions, I think, that deals with the policy issues, the implementation issues, and the legal issues. And so I would like to ask Mr. Chobani Popoz, who is the director responsible for managing and guiding and directing the policy and implementation issues, to deal with the questions, for example, around the marine spatial framework, the areas, the sub-regional plans, the purpose of those plans, the process that we're following to put those plans in place. I think also to deal with the question from Honourable Prince in respect of the fishing in relation to marine protected areas. I think also to deal with the question from Honourable Juliet in respect of oil exploration in relation to marine spatial planning and the process that is currently being followed with the National Working Group. It's a working group that's not yet established in terms of the legislation. But I think, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the critical thing is that there's an urgency to get the planning framework in place, because the activities and the intensity of interest, as Honourable Julia said, there's oil and gas exploration companies arriving, if not on a daily basis, certainly on a monthly basis. There's increasing interest, so it was critical that we, as government, there was a plan in place, and that work has gone ahead, and the legislation part of it is going ahead in parallel. I think Honourable Julius also raised a really key question around the sustainable development and how you implement sustainable development. What takes precedence? Is it economic or is it environment? And in some instances here, it's also social issues, because we're dealing with fisheries and aquaculture as one of the activities that's taking place and providing jobs. So, and I think this is the question that our department grapples with as Department of Environment, and therefore a department that is always in dealing with these questions of how do you ensure that economic growth and job creation is not impeded, but also is sustainable, that we are not undermining the natural resource base that is really the foundation of much of our economic activity. And the question that is raised in the context of tourism, and the question that's raised in the context of mining, oil exploration, farming, aquaculture, human settlements, etc. So, and I think the answer really is about, in respect of this bill, is about making sure that there's a decision-making process
that is informed by a set of principles that are essentially principles that are sustainable development principles. And these are principles that apply both in enabling and ensuring economic growth and social development, but also enabling and ensuring that this takes place within within the context of environmental sustainability. And the Marine Spatial Planning Bill puts down a set of principles that will guide decision making by the various structures set out by the bill. So, Honourable Chair, let me hand over to Chobani at this stage, then pass the legal questions to Radia, and if there's anything else that remains, then I can pick up the remainder. I think also to Honourable Nyambi's point about lack of accuracy and the mistake on the front page of the PowerPoint, and Honourable Chair, in respect of the error on the letter to you, I would like to apologise for that. And certainly, I think the bottom line is that the department really respects, engages with, and deeply appreciates the guidance and the input from this committee. And we will make sure that we clean up on those areas.
Thank you, DVD, and thank you, honorable members. Just to touch on a little bit of the questions around policy, this bill was fixed to achieve planning. All the other departments will continue doing their responsible regulatory authority. For instance, mining will continue, or the fisheries will continue with their own fisheries issues, environment will continue with it. So, to attend to the question around people not being allowed to fish in certain areas from vulnerable members to list, if in the absence of a planning system, that's exactly what happened. That the Department of Environmental Affairs, without planning with the other department, similarly to what this means is to achieve, will continue to execute its own mandate. Yes, the people who have the issue. But with this bill, into the future, we'll be able to sit together to the infrastructure that was proposed in the draft bill, where all the different departments and the constituents will actually discuss the issues together so that we avoid this conflict. No other activity has provided in the bill more important than the other one, but to contemplate we are hoping all the conflicting issues like access to human and protection in line with achieving our money will be achieved. I think DDG has also touched on the bit of financial assistance. We do recognize that. I think we have to judge the members of this committee. Another issue that has been raised is the difference between the framework, marine special framework, and marine special framework. The marine special planning framework actually influenced the drafting of the bill. When we did the marine special planning framework, it was seeking to guide us as to what process are we going to follow as far as the terms of implementing marine special planning. Before we started, there was no. We had to start from the framework where we discussed with the other role players, the different departments, the national working group, on how we go to approach this. And then the deal takes to legislate the process going forward. Because our experience in South Africa is that in the absence of the proper legislative framework, we tend to go back effort and not do what we need to achieve. So the framework and the deal is actually proposing the same process. But the other one is the legislation, the other one is the guide. So the guide is actually and then the second one is the National Working Group. The National Working Group is a group that was nominated by the different departments, and we did forward the terms of reference for this group, where we picked the different departments to nominate people who have the learning, the expertise, people with the, who are policy makers in their different departments, and people who have experience in the various science that is needed for the different development of the marine area. So when we seek expertise, basically just enhance the expertise that are already so the National Working Group is actually constituted by the different DGs, and then the DGs then means they are still responsible for whatever it is that the National Working Group constructed the National Working Group. So that is just a response. Again, the whole exploration issue is that the ocean is earmarked for different activities, including oil and gas. And the members of the National Working Group who have a PASA, which is the Ministerial Authority for Oil and Gas, and also DMR. So all the issues are actually presented to the National Working Group for discussion, where all of us with different beliefs and different backgrounds, we actually discuss the different activities as to how we can better enhance the economy of South Africa through the contribution of the ocean. Yes. There's a lot of things we could do, but without planning, all the economic projections that we seek to achieve in the ocean economy, for instance, because we will not be in the shape if we don't plan together, because we will continue just going on top of each other without achieving what we seek to achieve as a country, which is job creation, better contribution for the ocean, better marine transport, better oil and gas, and in the absence of the planning deal or planning process, in the level of development, all these things will not really achieve the success of these things. So this planning process is just proposing a better way of working together with different sector departments, which are representing their own stakeholders who have an interest in this.
Yes, legally it may not be a neat fit,
for a 76-fold. But we feel that it's a better process for, it was a better process for us to follow. On the process of consultation, in fact, we've got that in clause 9 of the bill, where we have to, the development of the marine spatial planning framework and the area plan, the National Water Room must ensure that all relevant stakeholders are adequately consulted, including sector departments, affected organs of state, institutional coastal planning bodies, which then talk to the provincial implementers in the coastal space, industrial representative bodies, representative organizations of affected persons and institutions on the general public. There's also, if you look at sub two of the section, it says five subsections on the sector departments like DMR and fisheries and environment, etc. Must ensure that their particular stakeholders were properly consulted, and the outcomes of the consultations must be made available prior to the development of any marine area plan, and this information should form part of the sector information submitted in terms of section 72. So you've got that leg of consultation. Then you've got the during the development of the plan, and the marine spatial planning framework actually sets out more details about how these guides on how these approaches can happen. But we want the National Working Group to have as much flexibility as possible to reach as many people as possible, as far and wide as possible, so that it's a comprehensively consulted board. Then there were some other questions around, Honourable Abu Stafnis asked about the National Environmental Management Act. That was also an issue that came up. But this marine spatial planning board, you will see, is not a specific environmental management act under the auspices of NEMA. It started out that way in the beginning stages of the board. But there was much resistance from other departments because they say environment can't be trumping every other sector there. It's not an environmental, it's a planning board. So what happened ultimately was that in order to accommodate everybody, it was taken out of the sphere of environment. So the environment is a sector. It's an important sector, but as important as the economic sectors in this planning. And I'm reminded of the question that was asked about in the scenario. There was a great attempt by all departments who, in order for them to participate fully, had to be satisfied, and of course can talk to some of the experiences we've had already in the national working groups around the development of area plans, stakeholder plans, etc. There's so many diverse interests from the different departments. Everybody wants to feel that they have an equal say. And everybody wants to feel like they're not being bullied by environment. So we were, and environment also has to have, ensure that the information is adequate so that the environmental protection is adequately rooted around the table. These were the complications we faced when we were developing this bill. So it was not put under the auspices of NEMA. So if it's not an environmental, pure environmental bill, it's a planning and coordination bill, but we were made one of the drivers of it because of the development of the ocean policy, so it kind of fell in our laps, and we had quite a great difficulty convincing other departments that this is in fact what we land with, and we're going to try to do the best that we can to make it coordinated and make it as possible. So for us to make it a NEMA chapter became almost impossible in that kind of environment that we found ourselves. I just want to see if there was any, are there any other legal questions? The definition, sorry. Honourable Abu-Sakni asked about the definition. If we look at, because this is, marine spatial planning is not just about a plan, it's about many different components, which is why why we have COSIC in the book, which talks to the marine spatial planning system. It says that the marine spatial planning system is an iterative phased process consisting of the following steps, and then it mentions these things, right? So we're looking at the framework. And one of the reasons, my colleague, Mr. Fosforti, spoke about why we have the framework in place and how it actually influences the book. We need to explain that when you talk to the framework gives you a lot more flexibility to do provide things than a boulder. So it gives you that the platform where you can put details in, where you can explain processes, and it actually gives a guide to what's intended in the building, because we know legislation is very restrictive in terms of what, because it talks to obligations and rights, and it talks to principles. But you can't explain in an essay way what you're trying to achieve, and the framework, we started there because initially, it was also when we spoke to Norway, they have done their planning, they didn't have legislation, and a lot of, in fact, apparently we're pioneering in the area of developing a law on marine spatial planning in globally, that is. So most of the other places have, they, in fact, when we went to a marine spatial planning session in one of the other countries, and they actually congratulated South Africa on the progress that we're making in it, because some of the developed countries have not got the, they've gotten policies and so forth, and many of them have not even put it in their law. Because you don't legally require a vote, you don't legally require a piece of legislation if you have a planning policy in place. But we were advised by some of the proponents of marine spatial planning, they said, in their experience, if the minute you have a change in the guard, next select committee, next government, next regime, that doesn't appreciate the process that happened before them, or is not aware of it, they're not going to implement, or it will just fall by the wayside, or it won't get priority. So if you write it in a law, it gives you that additional safeguard. So after we developed the framework and we had these consultations, we then and we went through the whole process with the Abbey Bonzi, it became imperative to then do a bold. So the framework is also mentioned in the bold, but it also gives you a better guide. And it also tells you what the provisions in the book. In fact, it places us in a better position than many of the other books, where you have to look to the memo of the objects and to find out meaning and to find out interpretation. So the memo of the framework may actually help us if there are interpretations that we will see later on. But it also gives you the kind of policy body. If we were to incorporate it, we may be able to do that as an annex on a schedule. Because if we do it as a schedule, then it makes it and you make it easier to amend it. Then if there's an amendment, like there was with the Act, you don't have to go through the whole process, because you want to be able to make it more flexible and easier to describe things. So that is a possibility, and will be led by the committee when we get to the full bustle. The committee is happy with that approach or not? But certainly we find it any. Extremely useful document. It's been what's been leading the National Working Group, because of course we're trying to catch up. So it's been leading us before the finalization of the work. The competency. We did, I'm sorry, Honourable Lovelace, you mentioned that we talked about competent officials. In the context of this, competence is intended to reflect in each department what's required for their mandate, but we can look at the definition. We just don't want to narrow that scope. We don't want to, in defining it, make it so narrow that we then limit ourselves. So we left it open. And just to add on that issue of the experts, we may have certain expertise in the department, but there's other extraneous expertise, like we need some serious GCIS expertise for that mapping, and not all of that resides within departments. So those are the kinds of technical geomapping kind of experts that they'd have to co-opt to assist them in developing the map. And I think that was the intention behind adding those experts. I think those were all the issues.
Honourable Chair, there was one question that I think we need to address.
assets from Honorable Nyambi on financial implications. And I think there are two parts of that question. The one question is, what are the financial implications of implementation, and where are the financial implications of implementation? And the second thing is, how do we finance it? So in terms of the first part, the financial implications relate to the development in particular of the marine area plans and implementation of marine area plans and therefore effectively implementation of the legislation. The financial implications of convening committees, convening of bringing in expertise, the necessary expertise, would be included in that. In terms of how we finance it, at the moment there are three sources. The one source comes from Operation Akita, because the Marine Spatial Planning Bill is one of the Operation Akita Ocean Economy targets. So the Operation Akita budget is has a component of Operation Akita budget has been allocated for this work. Secondly, we have donor funding. There is, as Radia has indicated, quite significant international interest in this process. And then thirdly, national departments that are part of this Marine Spatial Planning Bill will be budgeting for implementation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not thanking you.
Sorry that I just need to ask the last question. In the presentation, we refer to the extent of the shelf claim that we want to hold of the shelf to be successful. Do you have any indication on time frame of when it will be decided and so on? And then, just to in my mind of understanding, on the side where the oil and gas leases already exist. Certain things is competing, because we are trying to catch up with it, as I understand now. Certain instances, those areas have already been identified and left out of this field. It is competing with high biodiversity areas, spawning areas, or all those areas that you listed here, nursery areas, population, foreigners and stuff on the point. How is that being negotiated? And I would like Chair Fulu also to give this select committee in process a report of a progress report on how do we manage this competing priorities there. And then just for my own clarity, if we, and I understand that you say this is a bill of planning and coordination, necessary, and it's not specifically an environmental goal. But if you're talking about the ocean area maps, the idea would be that all the oceans as a total will be mapped, right? In my mind. Will these maps, will this goal then, as a planning goal, result in various areas, or the whole ocean that is under our command, if I can say so, will then be mapped for specific activities? And will there be an indication and say, in this area, this kind of activity is recommended or should be allowed, like, and will it make provision for seabed mining, which is a big issue at this moment, and we are and for aquaculture or deep sea aquaculture or oil and gas or whatever the kind of thing it might be. So it will say if we look back in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, whatever how long it takes, you will have the map of the watershed of South Africa and you will see what kind of activities will be allowed in certain areas or what kind of areas would be ideal for some.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Douglas Stephanie. To start with your second question around those areas, how do we protect those areas that from a biodiversity perspective are important, recognizing that there are activities that may not necessarily be complementary to looking after those biodiversity important areas. And one of the targets in the Ocean Pakita process was proclaiming a set of marine protected areas. South Africa has some marine protected areas, but currently only 0.4% of our ocean space has protected area status. And so the Operation Pakita target was to grow that area, that percentage. And you'll know that the Convention on Biodiversity has an international target of 10% protection of oceans by 2020. So the question was, how does South Africa move from where we are now at 0.4% to a much better percentage of protection. So in 2014, a set of marine protected areas were gazetted for public comment, and there's been extensive engagement with stakeholders, and Honourable Chair, certainly we could give the committee a more detailed presentation on that. I think just to summarise, that we are now at the process of having engaged with those stakeholders with an interest in fisheries, including the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and the fisheries industry, having engaged with fishing communities, have engaged with the Department of Mineral Resources, Petroleum Agency of South Africa, transport sector, etc. We now have, or we are getting close to a set of protected areas where the boundaries have been adjusted to accommodate as many interests as possible without losing those most important areas of ocean landscape, ocean species, and ocean ecosystems that we need to protect for future generations. The final negotiations are currently underway with the Department of Mineral Resources and the Petroleum Agency of South Africa, and our two ministers are currently in discussion in that process. And I think that process, to some extent, is really the marine spatial planning process in action, because it's about understanding what the spatial extent is of the current mining interest, the current oil interest, the current transport interest, the current defense interest, and the current environmental interest, the conservation interest, and ensuring that what we eventually proclaim as marine protected areas, we are able to enforce as well. I think that was one of the questions. The second question around, or there were three other questions around mapping of the ocean and mapping of specific activities. I think I started going into that. Perhaps Kobani, as chair of that national working group, you may like to just come in. On the extended continental shelf claim, that's been a long and complicated process. And I think to some extent we are at a point where further work is needing to be done. It's an international process. We're required to do further geological work, bathymetric work, which really is about mapping the ocean floor. And I think also, Chobani, you might have a little more intricate information on that.
Thank you, DDG. I think on the extended continental shelf, I would just like to mention that I'm hoping that the committee is aware of the huge investment that South Africa has done a few years ago of buying the FDA Agalas II, one of the big vessels that we use for Antarctica and Southern Ocean. I think in the last trip to Marin Island, there was a few days which were dedicated to this process. The DDG has mentioned that concept we are required to provide more information on the international shelf issue because we have to prove basically whether the shelf is the same as what we are trying to claim from the South African context. So that process is ongoing, but I think that it's been quite a while now. We should naturally get to conclusion, but I'm not sure on whether we're going to get all what we have played for. So I'm sure when that process comes and led by the pastor, we will be able to update the community. And then in the planning, we talk about maps. In our marine area planning process, honorable members, the first step for us to understand what is happening currently, we call it the current state of Chukot, who's doing what where. And then from there, then we do future projections based on what people are doing and what are the sector they are doing in sectors through their stakeholders. So the mapping is quite crucial because that's actually what we're currently dealing with now, so that we understand as to who to be what, and then all that information from the national working group will be submitted to the subsequent levels of decision making. Because they can't make decisions when they don't know what's happening when. So that is through the process that we currently embarking on now. Thank you so much.
Thanks, honorable member. We will further engage in the next committee. We appreciate and welcome the presentations. But in future, we should also have a touch on the marine defense in terms of the piracy in the ocean. As one of the things we will cover. No, thank you very much. We will let me just send over to the really appreciate you making questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the question of piracy is more South African national defense and They are, however, a key player in the mapping process. And the Defence, in fact, and the Navy have probably the most detailed plan on what is taking place in the ocean space. So they're a key player. But in respect of the piracy, managing the piracy, they would be the right department to bring into that. I think other than that, Honourable Chair, just to thank you. We stand ready if there are any further presentations, inputs that may be required in the event of any hearings that the committee might be scheduling. And we would also look forward to presenting on any other of the ocean and marine and coastal issues that the committee might be interested in. Could, for example, do an update on the ocean economy work, protected areas as I suggested. So we stand ready.
readiness because we'll then be braving our provinces. That we will not break in our members. We will indeed request you to be very supportive throughout the country. With those few words, the department has used the minutes to part of our community. Thank you very much. Thank you, honourable members. We still from your forum. I hope you manage to go through the minutes. Honourable Nyambi.
Chair, the last time I checked, I was from Mpumalanga province. All your minutes, I'm from Northwest province, and you are the one who's from Mpumalanga province. So, it's part of correction, chair.
Honourable Nyambi, so I will go to all the nitty-gritty. That's why also he will be a presentation. With his sharp eyes, able to identify all. Okay. I think with that amendment, he's proposing that we should do that. Is there any second? Honourable members, thank you very much. We've got the 19th. You check page by page, or honourable members with that opportunity. Okay.
Same thing, I'm from Mpumalanga, Jefferson is from Northwest.
For you, so
as
president.
In both meetings, I'm from Northwest, and the Jefferson is from Mpumalanga.
And Honorable Coyne was also present. With the correction, honorable members, Honorable Coyne, moving or second with the
commission. I second. Who moved? Yeah, we moved. I'm seconding.
Honorable member, thank you very much. Meeting standing, yes. I will request the management committee for just 5 minutes.
About the reason.